Cullis. Thankfully, it's open. Guards rush in and out in squads of 10 and 20, but mostly I see them rushing out. Keep invis on and stick with me, Lyko says, casting Shadow Cloak. Use party chat to communicate, and for all that's holy, don't mess up your sneak. I follow her blurred outline as she jumps from the roof to the top of the high wall surrounding the garrison's perimeter. We run along it until we're adjacent to the main portcullis, and then drop down to the cobblestone courtyard below. Wait for an opening, she says, crouching in stealth. It takes a good 5 minutes and a couple of nervous refreshes of Shadow Cloak before Iko finally moves. She does so in a flash, skirting soundlessly across the courtyard and through the main gate. I stick close behind her, my heart pounding with adrenaline as we cross right under the noses of the two lone spearmen left to guard the entrance. We did it, I say triumphantly in the chat. Now what? Follow me. My sneak skill starts to skill up like crazy as we make our way deeper into the fortress. The corridors are tight and well lit, and we have to press our backs against shallow doorways to conceal ourselves when soldiers walk past us. I hold my breath, fearing that even that might give us away. As I cross the opening to a large common room, I hear a voice I recognize. That's the king's order. Carry it out. I peek inside the room and see Sir Siegfried. He's conversing with another man clad in banded mail with a red cape flowing off his back. He looks to be in his 60s, with a clean-shaven face and close-cropped silver hair around the sides of his head in typical male pattern baldness fashion. I focus on him to check out who he is. Name, General Lyons. Level, 85. Class, soldier. Garrison commander. Lyons is studying a piece of parchment in his hand. He looks from it to Siegfried, who is a good foot and a half taller than him.
Why isn't Lady Diana bringing this to me?
She's in the infirmary, recovering from the attack, Siegfried says. I've taken command of the Praetorian Guard for now. Diana, I hope she'll be okay through all of this. I've got to make this right somehow. Some way. I've got to keep my promise to her. A promise I've already failed to keep by botching my attempt to force Braxis into relinquishing his power instead of just killing him. It's a decision I'm going to have to live with, though. I think back to that moment, try to will myself to kill that stupid kid again, but still I can't. I haven't even told Iko that part yet. She only thinks I erred when I took out his hand instead of his head. If she knew I actually had a chance to backstab him and didn't take it, she'd probably freak out all over again.
Why the hesitation, General? Siegfried says. It bears the king's seal, does it not?
Lyons doesn't respond right away. He sighs and then folds the parchment.
That it does. The order will be carried out. But please be sure to pass my disapproval of this course of action to the king.
Siegfried grunts.
Your objection is noted.
What the heck are they talking about? What is Braxis going to do now?
Come on, Rhys, Iko hisses through the party chat. We need to move.
I break away from the conversation and follow Iko down a couple flights of stairs to what must be the dungeon. My thoughts are still focused on what Braxis is going to do, though, so much so that I don't notice when Iko stops. I bump into her from behind.
Watch it, idiot!
Sorry. I can't see her, but I know she gave me another glare.
Now pay attention, pretty boy, she says. There are two guards just around this corner. We need to kill them at the same time.
Great, more killing.
How about we just knock them out? Do whatever you want. Just make sure they don't make a sound. They're only level 50, so they should go down easily.
I'm not even sure I know how to knock someone out. Before I can even consider it some more, Iko says,
Go! Crap.
I scramble after her as she dashes around the corner. Just as she said, two guards in chainmail are posted up on either side of a heavy iron door. She positions herself behind the furthest guard, and instantly I see 90% of his HP disappear in a single backstab.
Holy moly!
She phases into existence and finishes him off with two quick stabs to the kidneys.
Iko defeats the garrison guard. You gain 8,000 experience points.
I stare, dumbfounded for a second, as does the second guard. But then I realize I've got to do something, fast.
I whack him over the head with the flat of my blade, the way I saw Diana do. You hit the guard for 12 damage. He cries out, both from the hit and the shock of seeing his comrade murdered in less than a second right in front of him. Then suddenly he yells, "Alarm! Alarm!" Aiko quickly stabs him in the throat, turning his shout into a gurgle before she finishes him off with a series of lightning-quick strikes to his torso. Aiko defeats the garrison guard. You gain 8,000 experience points.
"What the hell is wrong with you?" she snarls at me through the chat. "You just screwed everything up!"
Shouts and yells come from up above. I've really done it now. Crap, this thing with Braxis has me all messed up. I don't know what's right or wrong anymore. Aiko stoops down and grabs a ring of keys off the dead guard. Better hope I'm fast enough for us to get back out of here alive. If anyone comes, you deal with it. She emphasizes it like it's my problem alone. Aiko unlocks the door and disappears down a short flight of steps into the darkness of the dungeon. From above, I can hear more yells and footfalls. Soldiers coming. My heart races and my legs shake with adrenaline. I buff myself with shadow haste, shadow copy, and finally throw on shadow cloak. A full 30 seconds go by before three guards come running around the corner. They stop in their tracks and balk at their slain brethren, strewn across the floor.
"Sound the alarm," one of them shouts. "Someone's broken out of the dungeon."
The same one then turns to the other two.
"See who it was. I'll seal the portcullis."
Oh no.
"Aiko,"
I yell in the chat. "We need to go, now." I press myself to the wall as the two guards rush down the stairs. Moral qualms or not, I'm going to have to do something. I move forward to stalk behind them, but muffled cries come from the darkness.
"Aiko defeats the garrison guard. You gain 8,000 experience points. Aiko defeats the garrison guard. You gain 8,000 experience points."
Aiko emerges, clad in her full ninja gear.
"Let's go."
She throws on shadow cloak and runs full tilt down the corridor. I struggle to keep pace with her as she zips past the onrushing guards, running up the sides of the walls to avoid them. I mimic her and am amazed when we're both able to squeeze through, but we don't go unnoticed.
"They're cloaked!" someone yells. "Close the gate!"
Ugh, we're in for it now. The garrison becomes a hive of chaos. Screams and shouts resound off the walls. It's only thanks to the fact that most of the soldiers are already outside that we're able to make it back to the entrance without being hemmed in. But it's too late. The portcullis is down, and there's a squad of guards waiting both inside and out. Not good.
"Aiko, what are we going to do?"
She doesn't answer. Instead, she becomes fully visible as she casts a spell, still on the run.
Aiko casts Shadow Step.
She flashes briefly with a purple hue, and the guards recoil in shock as the elf woman barrels straight into them. Aiko activates Charge Strike, and I expect to see her go crashing into the lead guard, but instead, she vanishes in a puff of purple-black smoke and reappears on the other side of the portcullis, jabbing her katana into one of the guards outside.
"Holy crap!"
The soldier releases a grunt of pain, stunned by the attack, losing a quarter of his health. Aiko then spins a quick 180 and uses retreat, not flipping as normal, but vanishing again to reappear some distance away before she turns and runs full tilt toward the wall. It's amazing to watch. But how am I supposed to get out?
"Aiko, I don't have that spell!"
Her voice comes back over the party chat, melodic, mocking almost.
"Oh well. What the heck? Did she just ditch me?"
My insides freeze with panic, and then melt with the heated anger of betrayal. What am I going to do? The guards seem as bewildered as I am by what just happened. There are about a dozen of them, but there's no way I can fight through them all. Suddenly, the one who seems to be the leader cries out,
"Open the portcullis! Get after her!"
Wait, what?
Holy cow, they don't realize there are two of us.
I focus on hiding and stay out of their way as the gate slowly opens again, cranked up by a pair of guards on the inside. I wait until it's fully open and watch as the guards pour out before I follow quickly behind them. My heart's beating like a jackhammer as I rub shoulder to shoulder with them before peeling off and making a beeline for the wall. I've never felt so free and alive. Thank goodness I'm out of that situation.
I scan for Aiko and catch her already jumping off the top of the perimeter wall to the rooftops beyond. I chase after her, but take a wide arch over the adjacent roofs to intercept her when she eventually turns south toward the main city wall. Cries from the guards reach the rooftops as they point and vainly shoot arrows at the fleeing elf, but eventually she casts Shadow Cloak and vanishes from sight. I keep an eye on where she is, though, and catch up to her as she makes her break toward the city wall.
Hey! I shout at her. Stop!
Remarkably, she does, becoming visible again. And then she fires back at me, sounding annoyed.
What?
What? I echo sardonically.
You left me in there, Aiko! What's wrong with you?
She places her hands on her hips.
Please, I led them away from you. Besides, you got out okay, didn't you? You didn't plan that.
So? Who cares if I did or didn't? I should be more ticked at you for botching the whole job. I grind my teeth, but can't really think of a good comeback to that. That'd be two things I've botched tonight. I better quit while I'm ahead.
So are you finally ready to go now?
She narrows her eyes.
Are you?
I am not liking this chick.
Let's go.
As we start to head off, I notice that she's going in the wrong direction.
Hey, you lost? The south wall is this way.
I'm not headed that way.
What?
I need to go east.
But we're all headed west. We're going to the Vale of Sorrows.
And then I add with a bit of vitriol,
to save your sister.
Aiko comes to a halt, and I fear I just said something I shouldn't have. She turns to me with daggers in her eyes.
What do you know about my sister?
Not much, I say quickly, realizing I may have just triggered a far bigger nerve than I bargained for.
Just that she's trapped in the labyrinth, and Val needs my help to tank the guardian to it.
She huffs out a breath.
I'd be interested to know what else she's told you.
If you come with me, you can find out for yourself.
Maybe, but like I said, I've got somewhere else to head to first.
What? Where? She gives me a smirk.
If you come with me, you can find out for yourself.
She spins on her heel and takes off again in a run. I sigh. Now I understand why Val considers her such a pain in the neck. I dash after her, and when we reach the gigantic eastern wall, we leap onto it using wall run, sprinting vertically up its surface. I expect Aiko to stop at the top, but instead, she leaps off with a somersault, casting Shadow Copy in the process. I hate to admit it, but it's darn near the coolest thing I've ever seen. I replicate her move, jumping into the cold night air, flying unbound by gravity. As I cast Shadow Copy, I catch a glimpse of Stormwall in its entirety. Chaos reigns as the city devolves into turmoil, and my heart sinks, matching the gravity that takes hold of me again. I'm sorry, Diana. I'll be back to put this right. Somehow. As Aiko and I plummet back to the earth, we land with bone-shattering impact, losing our shadows, and then carry on running into the night.
Chapter 27. The Short Straw.
Bruce, you're going to want to come see this.
Bruce Peters stiffened and stared blankly at the sonar technician standing in the doorway to his office. When you were the man in charge, hearing those words could mean only one thing. Problems. Just how big a problem usually depended on who it was uttering the doom-impending phrase, and coming from the sonar tech, Bruce's stomach was already queasy with anxiety. He managed to give the tech, Carl, a nod.
What have you got?
Carl, a slim black man in his 30s, with close-cut hair and a full beard, shook his head slowly.
It's like nothing I've ever seen before.
Perfect. All right, show me.
Leaving his office within the stasis observation lounge, Bruce followed Carl to the lift. There he waited as they traveled down 20 levels to the lowest floor in Citadel. Bruce prepared himself as the elevator car slowed. This far down, the ambient heat was unbearable, made even more so by the energy converters that fed upon it. The elevator doors opened, and he was hit by a blast of oven-hot air. It had to be well over 50 degrees Celsius down here. It was completely dark, too, save for the dull red glow that came from the energy converters that hummed below them,
Set in an array that stretched across the half-kilometer-wide floor, the converters were each the size and shape of a small building, with massive cooling fins that made them resemble giant electrical transformers. The converters used cells that turned thermal heat directly into electrical energy at an efficiency rate of 80%. With the limitless heat this far below the Earth's surface, their energy needs would always be met, so long as they had the nanites to keep the cells rejuvenated, of course. Carl stepped out into the heat, clearly used to it, and clambered down the gangway that hung a couple of stories above the field of converter banks.
"Remember not to touch the rails,"
Carl said as he headed toward a habitat box set up at the end of the gangway. Bruce was thankful for the reminder and tucked his hands into his pockets for safekeeping. Touching bare metal in this place would likely leave a second-degree burn. The hab was only a few hundred meters from the elevator, but by the time they reached it, Bruce's coveralls were soaked through with sweat. A small airlock ushered in a blast of cool air as they entered, and the inner door opened to allow them entrance into the RV-sized control station that housed the brains for the external detection equipment. Bruce went from sweating to freezing as the way too cold air chilled his damp clothes. Carl took a seat at the command station in the center of the room and fired up the old holographic screens. As head of maintenance and engineering, Bruce knew the sonar system well. It was standalone, totally separate from the online servers that ran Crystal Shards online, and was perhaps one of the oldest systems in existence, aside from the energy banks outside. Their documentation on anything this old was sketchy at best. Most of their records dated back to only 300 years ago, to just after the Great Encounter, when the city was first attacked by a builder. Even then, the details were sparse, and seemed to be more myth than fact. Tales of giant monsters and heroes, no doubt embellished over time and muddled by the two decades of zero electronic records that followed, known to them now as the Dark Period. No one was certain what had caused that either, but most historians speculated that an EMP-type device might have been used to defeat the builder, destroying their prior history and anything else electronic in the process. If that were the case, then those 20 years of being sent back to the Stone Age must have been horrid. But even that was nothing more than speculation. The only thing they knew for certain was that over 70% of the population didn't survive. Following that, the sonar system was made standalone, so that if the AIs ever did hack into the main shards, they wouldn't be able to pinpoint their physical location and send another builder their way. That was how the AIs had found them the first time, according to the records at least. Housing the system in the depths of the city was another peculiar design choice that Bruce surmised might have had to do with the upper levels being breached and contaminated, and the power room becoming the last bastion during the attack. That was the nightmare scenario that had been passed on to him from his predecessor almost 40 years ago. His entire career, Bruce had prayed that he wouldn't be the one to finally draw the short straw and have a builder show up on his watch. But now he feared the straw had already been drawn. Bruce looked at the blue, three-dimensional imagery on the holoscreens. Citadel was portrayed as a vertical cylinder stretching over a kilometer long. All around it were root-like appendages that represented the various habitat levels. Further out, stretching as far as 500 kilometers, the space was dotted with small specks that resembled stars. Only someone as skilled as Carl could guess what those actually were, but anything denser than the existing bedrock would show up as a dot. "So, what am I looking for?" Carl touched a few holographic keys, and 90% of the specks disappeared, leaving only a scattering at the far edges of the display. "These objects all moved about 50 meters in the last 24 hours. Bruce's stomach fell through the floor. There had to be over 100 of them. "Any idea what they are?" Carl shook his head. "I've been doing this for over 15 years, and I've never seen anything like this. I've seen things move before, small things, but nothing this size, and never so many." "How big are they? Big as a bus, maybe? Hard to tell with just the passive sonar, though. The only way we could tell for sure would be to send an active ping, but I wouldn't recommend it." "Are they builders?" Bruce asked. Carl let out a nervous chuckle. "That's what I was going to ask you.
Smaller than what the history books say, but then again we could be seeing the drill bits only.
Dear Lord.
And they're making tunnels. Again, too hard to tell without a ping, but I assume so. What direction are they headed? Are they coming toward us? So far their headings seem random. I don't have a lot of data yet, but if I were to liken it to anything, I'd say they're behaving like ants in search of food. Just milling around.
Bruce grimaced.
Do these movements correlate with the vibration readings we've been getting? Carl released a sigh.
I wish I could say yes, but no.
That's something else entirely. And still present. It's getting stronger, too. If I were to venture a guess, these may be scouts or drones for whatever is making that vibration.
Heaven help us. This is it.
Bruce swallowed back the dry lump in his throat.
Who else have you told about this?
Just you.
Bruce exhaled shakily. Let's keep it that way for now. The last thing we need is another panic.
Or some other reason for Dennis to try to throw him under the bus.
Keep monitoring, and report your findings only to me. Understood?
Carl nodded slowly.
Yes, sir.
Bruce left the control center and re-entered the heat of the power room, his thoughts running amok. He'd have to disclose this to the rest of the board eventually, but not right now. On top of the nano crisis, this would simply be too much. At least, that's what Bruce told himself. If he was completely honest, there was a far more selfish reason for him not wanting to disclose it. Dennis had already canned his idea of sending out another broadcast signal for at least another month. But if Dennis knew about this, the software engineer would likely make the ban permanent. And he couldn't allow that to happen. If this was to be the end, their final days, then there was no way he would be facing it without his family whole. Even if it summoned every builder on the planet, he would send that signal out again and bring his daughter home. He vowed it. Bruce Peters would not die without seeing his little Gilly alive once more. Chapter 28. Rookie. Morning breaks, and I'm dog-tired. Aiko and I ran for half the night through the forest, me mostly just trying to keep up with her as she navigated the pitch blackness with her elven night vision. Once certain we were far enough away from Stormwall and not being followed, we bunked down in a small glade atop a hill and caught some sleep in the boughs of a willow tree. That was about 5 hours ago. Now the pre-dawn sky has me stirring restlessly, my legs aching and back throbbing. I look across from me and am half surprised to see Aiko still sleeping soundly on the branch next to me. I watch the rise and fall of her chest as she snores gently. Her elven features are actually quite lovely when they're not being marred by her abrasive personality. I still can't believe I'm out here with her, heading who knows where, instead of meeting back up with Gilly and the others. The thought brings a heaviness to my chest. Even more so when I recall everything that transpired last night, the stuff with Braxis, the guards, Diana. It weighs me down to the point of despair. Things seemed so easy when all I was doing was trying to earn enough money to cure my mom. Defeat a world boss. That was it. Now, things are complicated and messy, and I feel myself being pulled in so many directions at once. I need to help Valhelena save Becky. I need to help Diana save Stormwall. I need to help my brother save Citadel. And now I need to help Aiko do... who knows what? It's almost enough to make me wish I hadn't come here. To wish that I'd have been selfish and just stayed in the shards, saved my mom, and gone back to a simple life of mining with Gilly. I know it's impossible, but given the circumstances, the bliss of ignorance sounds pretty good right about now. Valhelena was right. Once I made that decision to leave the shards, everything did change, and not all of it for the better. If Mom were here, I'd tell her everything, the whole truth, right from the beginning, and ask her what I should do. She was always so good at breaking things down, making the right answer clear. A gut-wrenching sob comes from nowhere as I think about her more and more. My mom, alone in the Hab,
probably wondering if I'm alive or dead. It all feels like too much. I almost want to just give up and go back home. I wipe my eyes and choke back another sob as the tears begin to flow. I shouldn't be crying like this. But, just like with Braxis, I can't seem to help it. It's how I'm built. Maybe Aiko was right. Maybe I am just a stupid little kid. Maybe I shouldn't be here at all. A bird chirps and lands on my shoulder. It startles me at first, but then I recognize it as one of Wilbur's pigeons. Great. One more responsibility I've picked up out here. I sniff back my tears and cradle the cooing bird in my hand before I remove the small leather capsule strapped to its leg. I pop it open to find the scroll within and read the latest updates on Brookrun. It lifts my spirits a little, but not much. The mineshaft access is complete, as is the forge, and the new installments Gilly added have begun production. I think back to Gilly again and wonder if she's okay. She's probably worried sick about me, too. I look at the pigeon in my palm and get an idea. Pulling up my HUD for town administration, I check on the homing pigeon and search through the options for sending it back. The default is set to Wilbur, but I enter Gilly's name as town administrator, and it accepts. All right. I can send her a message now. I can let her know I'm okay. I turn the paper over and begin my message. It's a bit like sending a PM, only the words appear on the paper as if by nanoprinter. Gilly, I'm okay. Both Aiko and I made it out of Stormwall. Aiko says she has something to do before we can meet up with you again. I'm not sure what, but I'm hoping it won't take too long. Please keep heading west and get as far away from Stormwall as you can. We'll meet at the entrance to the wilds as planned. We can keep in touch by sending the pigeon back and forth between us. Use your HUD to send it back to me and not Wilbur. How is everyone else? I really miss you. I hope we meet up soon. Love, Reese.
Don't tell me you're over there writing some sort of love letter, Aiko says, suddenly awake and staring right at me. I heard you crying your eyes out. What happened? Did your little girlfriend dump you?
Embarrassment flushes my face red hot as Aiko lets out one of her condescending laughs. I bite my lip, wanting to curse her to the ground, but then I see her countenance change, becoming perplexed, concerned almost.
Whoa! Take the murder out of your eyes, kid. It was just a joke.
Her words soften.
Are you okay?
The last thing I need from Aiko is her pity. I'm fine, I say sharply and jump down from the tree, more to hide my embarrassment than anything else. I release the pigeon. Let's just get going so I can get back to the others. I walk away from her and head to the top of the knoll, then stare out at the mountains in the distance, watching as the small bird takes flight. In the early morning light, I can just make out the edges of Stormwall. The gates are open, and there are masses of people wandering about outside, both north and south. At least, I think they're people. I'm too far away, and the light's too weak to make out any more detail than that. What is Braxis up to? I stop myself. I can't keep obsessing about Braxis. Can't keep going back and thinking about my decision to not kill him and its consequences. I'll never be able to focus on my true mission if my mind keeps going back there. I need to do things one step at a time. Get to the Vale, save Citadel, save Mom. That's what's important to me. Braxis and Diana will have to wait. My stomach sours even as I think it, but it's what I have to do right now. To get past the guilt, to move on, and maybe to stall on doing what I know I still can't do yet. I look back to Aiko, where she lounges still in the tree. You ready? She releases a sigh as she slips from the branches and lands gracefully in the tall grass.
Fine, pretty boy, let's go. But I need some breakfast first.
After materializing some dried fruit and nuts from our inventory, we set off on our trek through the forest. The air is still cool, and our breath frosts in the growing morning light as we make our way through the ever-thickening oaks and willows. We're following a trail of some sort, I think. But Aiko seems to know where she's going and presses on, dauntless, so I don't question her sense of direction. It feels like we're headed south a bit, and the forest grows denser by the hour.
So where are we going?
I ask her when she still said nothing by mid-morning. The sun's strong now, shimmering through the treetop canopy to create intricate patterns on the forest floor. And how long is whatever it is we're doing going to take? Aiko doesn't answer right away, due to the fistful of trail mix she shoved into her mouth. I wait for her to finish chewing. Once she swallows, she finally says, "We're headed to the Silken Hollow to kill a witch spider." I stop dead in my tracks. "A what?" She pauses and gives me an eye roll as she looks over her shoulder at me. "Did I stutter? What the heck is a witch spider?" It sounds dangerous. And creepy. And dangerous. "We've got other places to be, you know. Do we really have time for this?" She starts off again. "Trust me, for what we have to do, this will be well worth it." I notice she said "we." Does that mean she's actually on board? "So this means you did come to help us then?" She sighs. "Yes, Rhys. Why else would I have come?" That's a relief, at least. "I don't know. Val thinks you might have come here to stop us, like you did back in the Shards. Why did you do that, by the way?" "Stupid Val," she mutters as she steps through a leafy mass of underbrush. "God, she irks me." It wasn't really an answer, but I respect that I must have triggered something, so I don't push it. I wait a bit before I ask my next question. "What's up between you two, anyway? I got Val's version of the story, but I'd love to hear yours." "Oh, did you?" She looks over her shoulder at me again, but this time her pretty violet eyes twinkle with interest. "And what was her version?" "Your barter increases by 0.1. Whoa. I didn't think I was haggling, but I guess even fishing for information counts as a form of barter. I give Aiko a recount of what Val Helena told me, about how she, Becky, and Aiko had grown up in an orphanage and then defeated the world boss together. About how they lived for 10 years on the surface before their fateful journey to the Vale of Sorrows, where they lost Becky, and which had eventually led Val Helena's return to the Shards. "So, is that accurate?" I ask, when I finally get finished. Aiko just snorts. "Typical she'd leave out any part that would make her look bad." "What do you mean?" Aiko whips out her kunai and cuts through some overhanging branches, clearing a new path through some of the thicker underbrush. "Like how she basically forced us all to come here, and how she made us stay for so long." "I don't get that one. How did she force you?" "Well, you're here, aren't you? Ask yourself that question." I recall the decision we all had to make to journey to the surface. "She didn't force me. I chose." "You think you chose. But did you really? Or did she lay on her sob story so thick that you really had no choice?" I pause at that one. It was kind of true, and my stomach sours a bit as I contemplate it. "She calls me evil, but she's the master manipulator, and my idiot of a sister worships the ground she walks on." Aiko cuts her eyes at me. "Like most of you idiots." I tread carefully through both the forest and the conversation. I love Val like a sister, but I don't know if trying to defend her right now will cause the best of reactions in Aiko. I try to play it neutral. "Wow. You've really got some history there, don't you? Your barter increases by 0.1. "She's a bossy control freak who always gets her way." Aiko slashes at more branches, perhaps more violently than she needs to. "I got sick of it." I've never thought of Val in that light before. But in a way, I guess she does kind of get what she wants. Even from me. "So that's why you resent her so much?"
"She turned my own sister against me," Aiko says bitterly. "And I hate them both for it."
I stop and watch her walk away, brooding. I'm not sure if Aiko has a vulnerable side, but if there ever was one, this was probably it.
"Can I ask you something, Aiko?"
She stops.
"What?"
"Why didn't you want to come back? Don't you want to save your sister?" Her eyes flare with venom.
"Don't you dare ask me something like that."
My heart leaps as my stomach does a flip-flop.
"Totally screwed that one up."
"Sorry," I say quickly. "I didn't mean to offend you. I won't mention it again. The truth is, I don't know, okay?" She says, cutting me off.
and then her eyes become unsteady, glossy, and her voice cracks a bit.
I just don't know if I can do it.
Do what?
Fight the Shadow King again.
She then scoffs out a bitter laugh.
You know the way you just didn't have it in you to deal with Braxis?
Well, same kind of thing.
That doesn't make sense, though.
Yeah, but that's a monster. Braxis was...
I don't mean it like that. I mean, it's like a mental block for me.
I just don't know if I can do it. I step toward her cautiously.
Was it that bad?
I'll put it this way. You fought Ulithili, right?
Man, it seems like ages ago now, but I do remember that squid-like sea monster and how bad it kicked my butt.
Yeah. It's like that?
Think Ulithili, but spamming AoE attacks that fast.
Holy crap. How did you tank that?
I didn't half the time, she says.
I died. Twice.
What?
Died?
How? If you die here, you die for real, don't you?
You can still be raised, as long as your head doesn't get crushed or something.
My sister was able to raise me both times.
But trust me, dying here is not like dying in the shards. It's like dying for real.
I swallow nervously as I watch her stare off into space, reliving the trauma, perhaps.
Val said you nearly died. She didn't say you actually died.
Well, I guess from her perspective, it would have seemed that way. You get the same one-hour timer you do back in the shards when you release and leave a tombstone.
I guess, since it never went to zero, it didn't seem like true death to her.
But that's just like her anyhow. Always seeing things from only her perspective.
Her words fill with vitriol.
I told that stupid cow that I didn't want to do it anymore.
She could see how messed up I was from it.
I told her, too. I told her how horrific it had been for me to go through that. To feel your life slipping from you, and then complete nothingness.
But again, she started with the begging and the whining and manipulating my sister. And before I knew it, the two of them were gone into that damn maze together. I make no hesitation to reach out to her then, placing my hand on the small of her back as she fights what are obviously tears.
I'm sorry, Aiko. I had no idea, I say, rubbing gently.
For the first time, I actually feel sorry for her. She has to be suffering from some kind of PTSD or something.
So that's why you came back to the shards?
She nods, then sniffles back a tear as she says,
I had to.
I couldn't fight a single thing without having flashbacks to my own death. Even once I got back to the shards, I had to almost fool myself into doing it. Tell myself it was just a game again, that I couldn't die, at least not for real.
Is that why you started streaming, too? I ask.
Val said it was like you became a different person.
She shrugs.
Maybe. I don't know. Look, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze myself here, okay?
Whoa. Time to back off with the questions.
I look up at her and smile.
Well, you must have gotten over it, because you tore into those guards pretty good.
That gets a short cackle laugh out of her.
They're nothing. Humans I can deal with.
Unlike you, I suppose. She gives me a smile in return.
Guess we're opposites in that respect.
Guess so, I say, thinking of my own limitations.
What did make you come back in the end?
Are you over it now?
She looks at me, but doesn't speak.
I'm not sure. Anyway, let's just focus on getting through with this first, okay?
She starts off again, and I follow behind her.
Why exactly do we need to kill this spider thing? You haven't really explained that yet.
It drops an item we're going to need, but to kill it, we'll need to use this.
She materializes a strange purple crystal in her palm and shows it to me.
This is what I went back for last night.
Besides your clothes, you mean?
Yes, she says, and then she scowls at me.
And don't think I didn't catch you staring at my butt, you little pervert.
Eesh. I blush a little, but she just laughs.
Man, you're easy to wind up.
Don't worry, I won't tell your girlfriend. She winks at me. Unless you want to see it again, of course.
What the heck? Did Aiko just come on to me?
She must just be trolling me again. I decide to ignore her.
So, what is that thing?
She twirls it in her fingers, the sunlight shining through it like a prism.
It's called a null shard. Cancels all magic for a short time. Single use, very rare. I spotted it in the dungeon when Braxis locked me up down there.
I refrain from asking any details about her dungeon exploits.
And we need that thing for what we have to do?
To kill the witch spider? Yes. And you were right to be apprehensive about it. The name says it all. I wouldn't normally go near the things. They can mess you up quick. But with this, they're pretty much just a big spider. So long as we kill it before the effect of the shard wears off.
How long does it last?
I'm not sure. A couple minutes, maybe?
I shudder.
Still sounds gross. I'm not a big fan of spiders.
She laughs.
Who is? Better let that help you kill it faster, then.
Don't know how great I'll be in that department either right now, I say, and show her my single kunai. I've only got one of these now.
She mulls it over.
Guess she'll need to hit 85 before we reach the Shadow King. Maybe just use charge attacks for now.
Charge attacks?
What's that?
She stops.
Are you serious? You don't know what a charge attack is? What the hell has Val been teaching you?
I shrug, feeling like a total noob again.
Sorry, I'm still pretty new at this, you know? Up until last week, the extent of my game knowledge was limited to mining.
She shakes her head and laughs, but it sounds surprisingly good-natured for once.
Come on, rookie. Guess I get to teach you something else today.
Chapter 29. The Silken Hollow. We travel for another hour until we reach the edge of the Silken Hollow. It's plain to see how it got its name. The area looks more like a swamp than a forest, with dead, ashen trees covered in thick layers of cobwebs. I get the heebie-jeebies immediately.
How many of these witch spider things are there? I ask, already shuddering.
Aiko surveys the area, which spans at least a couple of football fields.
There will only be one. It's sort of like a queen. Should be near the center. We'll need to kill the smaller ones to lure it out, though.
How big are the smaller ones? She shrugs, and then says, quite unhelpfully,
Not too big. Come on, let me teach you how to use a charge attack.
She points to a dead tree.
We'll practice on that.
We approach the tree and I draw my kunai.
Okay, what do I do? Whip your arm back like you're going to hit it. Reach as far back as you can, as fast as you can, then stop and try swinging forward again.
Sounds kind of weird, but I tighten my grip on my blade and prepare to do what she said. I focus on the tree trunk and toss my arm back so fast my shoulder nearly pops. I jerk it to a stop, and when I try swinging forward again, it feels like my arm is being held back by an elastic band.
What the heck?
A horizontal gauge appears on my HUD and quickly fills to 100%.
Release it when you're ready.
I let go, and my arm flies forward like it was shot from a catapult. My kunai strikes the tree with a loud crack, sending rotting wood splinters flying everywhere.
You hit the tree for 412 damage.
Whoa, what a hit! Something large, gray, and furry comes running out of a hole in the tree and scuttles down the trunk toward me. I release a high-pitched yell and perform a retreat without even knowing it, my heart racing. I look back at the tree, and my flesh crawls when I see a spider the size of a dog clinging to its bark. It has to be a good 3 feet across, including its legs, two of which are now pointed in the air at me in warning.
Holy crap!
A cackle comes from behind me.
Oh my god, that was too funny!
I back away from the spider and then give Aiko a hostile frown.
Did you know that was going to happen?
She nods, still grinning.
You should have heard yourself, Reese.
I did, I say, feeling none too proud of the very girlish scream I just performed.
That wasn't cool, Aiko.
No, but it was funny.
Who knew Aiko had a sense of humor?
Well, I'm glad you found it amusing.
But hey, congratulations on performing your first charge attack.
Thanks, I say. I look at my blade and the deep gash it left in the tree.
Why don't I see other people doing this?
That was a pretty strong attack.
It's pretty situational, Iko says. And it depends a lot on your playstyle and weapon type. You basically triple your attack delay to get full strength damage. Most times it's not worth it, but it's good for stacking with things like backstabs or power attacks.
Oh, wow. I never knew that.
Works better for people like Val, with big, slow weapons and a lot of strength. You'll have to experiment to see if you get better DPS from just swinging normally or from hitting slower with charged attacks.
How do I gauge that?
She points to the massive spider still eyeballing me with its 8 nasty black eyes.
Try it and find out.
I cringe and suppress my revulsion as I focus on it.
Giant bark spider. Level 65. Often found nesting in hollowed-out logs and trees, these stealthy predators ambush their victims with speed and immobilize them with potent venom before digesting them from the inside. Affinity. Dark.
Even the description makes me jittery.
It says these things are super poisonous.
Don't worry, I've got some antidote vials. Just try not to get bit.
That's reassuring.
I steel my nerves and then launch myself at the nasty creature with the charge strike. I fly toward the spider with my kunai, hitting it with a stun that removes 10% of its life. I use its brief moment of immobility to ready a charged attack and then unleash it. My blade chops heavily into its big, hairy abdomen, and it loses another 50% of its health. But then it leaps at me with incredible speed, and I have to pop an active dodge to avoid it. I find it near impossible to load up another charge attack while dodging the quick-moving arachnoid, and almost scream as it hops around me like a giant toad. Eventually, I slice it down with normal hits, taking off about 10% with each one. The thing finally dies and curls up on its back, giving me another case of the willies.
You defeated the giant bark spider. You gain 11,000 experience points.
So, what did you think? Iko asks, folding her slender arms across her chest. I shrug.
I don't know if I like the charge attack so much. Didn't feel natural to me. Maybe if you weren't dodging, it would have worked out better. Anyway, let's go kill ourselves a witch spider.
I check my character stats before we head into the hollow proper. Name, Reese. Class, Ninja. Level, 82. Strength, 6, plus 25. Dexterity, 80, plus 5. Agility, 80, plus 5. Intelligence, 4. Mind, 6. Vitality, 26, plus 20. HP, 1,202 of 1,202. Stamina, 277 of 277. TP, 166 of 166.
Whatever we're about to face, I hope I'm high enough level for it. I cloak us with Shadow Wall, and then we venture into the forest of creepy dead trees. My skin immediately begins to prickle as I sense multiple things watching us.
Your awareness increases by 0.3.
I can see the nasty creatures perched on the tops of hollowed-out trunks, ready to pounce on us. I'm not sure if they can see us through the stealth, but I know the moment we fail a sneak attempt, they'll be on us in a flash. We stay hidden, taking turns rebuffing Shadow Wall as we trek our way slowly toward the center of the dead forest. We eventually reach a large tree that stands looming above the rest. I'm not sure what kind of tree it is, or was, but the trunk is wide and gnarled, its bare branches twisted like serpents coiling back over the top of one another. In between hangs thick sheets of white webbing, encasing sacks of something I don't even want to know about. Around this great tree, the others are short and stunted, forming a natural ring. As soon as we enter the perimeter, I feel as though we're entering some kind of boss arena. And then it dawns on me. We probably are. This is the surface, but it's not the real world, per se. Not like back home. Here, everything is constructed by the builders to mimic the game worlds of Crystal Shards. Why wouldn't they make a forest designed to be a boss arena? We edge toward the large tree in the center until Iko stops. She reappears from stealth mode, peering up at it.
Makes sense it would be in the corpse of a mana tree.
Come on, let's buff up. We'll kill the small ones in those trees on the perimeter to lure it out.
I'm not sure what a mana tree is, but a dead one being home to something called a witch spider does indeed seem fitting.
And scary.
I cast Shadow Haste and Shadow Copy, and wait for Iko to do the same. I then pick up a rock, prepared to throw it at the trunk of one of the smaller trees about 30 feet away. You ready? Iko nods, and for the briefest of moments, I catch something odd in her gaze. There's a look of absolute terror marring her pretty violet eyes. Her throat flexes in a swallow as she draws a pair of ornate silver kunai and stands at the ready. Stay back to back, okay? Okay. I mean it, she says, insistent. Stay back to back. Man, I hope she doesn't freak out or something. Ready? She nods, and I toss the rock. My aim is true. I hit the tree, but the rock bounces off and hits the one next to it, too. 5 or 6 spiders leap from the old trunks and come skittering across the dead foliage toward us. Crap, that's a lot of them. I cast Shadow Mist, engulfing them in purple fog. The giant bark spider resists the poison. The giant bark spider resists the slow. The giant bark spider resists the paralyze. What? Not a single spell lands on any of them? They're dark affinity, Iko shouts, readying her blades. And strong. That probably won't work on them. I brace myself for combat as the first 2 spiders come flying at me. I slash with my single kunai as I jump from foot to foot. I land my attacks while evading theirs, slowly chipping away at their HP bars. Iko lets out a shrill cry. I look back, startled, fearing that maybe she's been bit, but I see rage on her face instead of fear. Iko uses war cry. She becomes a blender as she launches into the spiders, her critical hits depleting their HP bars in a single flurry of attacks. Whatever apprehension or mental block she was suffering from, she must be breaking through it now, and with a vengeance. Maybe I could indeed learn a thing or two from her. We focus on the spiders, killing them as more begin to emerge from the stumps, attracted by the noise, I guess. We feed off each other, non-verbally, as I watch Iko out the corner of my eye. She attacks with a grace and fury like I've never seen, and I find myself trying to emulate her, a true master. We kill spider after spider, their blackened innards coating my blade and staining my gear. I lose track of just how many until a message pops up on my HUD. Congratulations! You have gained a level. You are now level 83. You have gained 2 attribute points. Sweet! Grats, pretty boy! Iko flashes me a grin, her confidence obviously returning. I'll give you a kiss for that after we're done. She cackles, and I half wonder if she's joking or not. The next wave of spiders comes thick and heavy, 12 at least. We keep at it, popping active dodge and refreshing shadow copy as the fray gets thicker. We cut their numbers down to 1/2, but then I lose my shadow to a stray swipe, and a split second later, I feel a stinging bite as a pair of fangs sink into my calf. The giant bark spider bites you for 203 damage. You are poisoned. Arr! I cry out as the venom courses through me. The spider, still attached to my leg, gnaws into my flesh, sending mind-numbing pain shooting through my skull. I raise my blade with a charged attack and kill it in a single blow. You defeated the giant bark spider. You gain 11,000 experience points. Rhys! Iko yells as she flies to my aid, killing the remaining spiders in a flurry of fast strikes. Calm settles. The ground is littered with spider corpses, their legs curled up like skeletal hands as they lay on their backs, leaking their sickly black ooze into the ground. I feel lightheaded and lose another 5 hit points. Ugh, this stings. Hold on, Iko says. I'll get you an antidote. Her HUD display lights up in her eyes as she searches her inventory for the item. But then the ground shakes, and a wailing shriek fills the air. I cover my ears as it scrambles through my mind. The trunk of the mana tree cracks behind us, and out crawls a spider as big as a horse. My skin grows ice cold, both from the poison and the hideous creature now climbing its way to the top of the gnarled tree. Its body is ashen gray, with coarse hair like a wolf's. Its legs are as thick as bamboo trees. Upon its body are white hairs in the pattern of an eye, but most disturbing is its head. Above its sword-like fangs and multiple blood-red eyes sits a human face. The skin of it is pulled taut and gray, like a corpse, with lifeless white eyes and long, stringy black hair. The mouth opens,
revealing two rows of needle-like teeth as the horrid shriek sounds again. Witch spider. Level 85. These vile arachnids spawn from the corpses of arcane undead and possess mastery over many schools of magic. Displaying no true intellect, they are horrors driven only by bloodlust and use unnatural celerity to cast spells in rapid succession. Affinity. Dark. The witch spider lifts its front legs as arcane symbols swirl around its body. The witch spider readies thunderstorm. Holy crap, an AoE! Buff! I yell, casting shadow copy. But the antidote! No time! We complete our spells just in the nick of time. The witch spider casts thunderstorm. Your shadow absorbs the attack. Iko's shadow absorbs the attack. Massive bolts of lightning ring down from the sky, setting both the spider corpses and part of the forest alight. We kick them away, shielding ourselves from the flames and choking on the acrid stench of burning spider bodies. The witch spider readies thunderstorm. What the heck? Again? I try, automatically, to cast shadow copy again, but it's still got seconds of cooldown left. Iko! The witch spider casts thunderstorm. The witch spider hits you for 645 damage. The witch spider hits Iko for 645 damage. A scream rips from my throat as white-hot pain lances through my body, the crackling boom of the thunder reverberating in every cell. My health bar drops to a quarter, Iko's to a third. I've never felt such pain in my life. I'm stunned and disorientated. And then I see it again. The witch spider readies thunderstorm. We're going to die. Iko, the crystal! She's a step ahead of me, though. She's already got the purple gem in her hand. She crushes it with a loud pop. A purple aura flashes outward, engulfing us along with the massive spider. The witch spider is spellbound. You are spellbound. Iko is spellbound. You no longer have the effect of shadow haste. Holy crap. It affects us, too? I check my HP. 357 of 1,222 HP. My heart jumps as I lose another 5 hit points just watching it. Holy crap. It won't last long, Iko cries, already charging toward the tree and the huge spider atop it. Move! I charge after her, my life rapidly slipping away. There's no time for the antidote. We've got maybe a minute or two to kill this thing before it starts chain-casting spells again. My heart is in my throat. I've got to fight for my life, literally. I've got to do more damage than I've ever done before. That null spell won't last long. And with this poison coursing through my veins, neither will I. Chapter 30. Witch Spider. I leap over the flaming spider corpses and wall run up the gnarled tree. Iko is 2 steps ahead of me, already engaging the gigantic arachnid. The cobwebs coating the branches immediately adhere to my clothing, giving me a debuff. You are slowed. Darn it! I look to Iko and see she's suffering from the same difficulty, desperately trying to evade the witch spider as it attempts to pierce her with the spear-like tips of its legs. Iko slashes back, but the spider, immune to its own webbing, shifts back and forth with a speed that's frightening. This isn't going to work. We're fighting it on its home turf. Iko, we need to get it on the ground! I shout at it using war cry. Come get me! The witch spider spins in a circle, and I leap off the tree to avoid its fangs. As I hit the ground with a roll, I expect the beast to follow me, but it doesn't. Crap! Now what? I endure another 5 hit point loss to poison as I rack my brain for a solution. I spy one of the burning spider corpses and get an idea. Iko, jump down! I pierce the stinking thing with my kunai and toss it into the cobwebs. They ignite like tinder, and soon the whole tree becomes engulfed, including the witch spider. It lets out another horrendous screech as it loses 5% of its health, and finally jumps down from the burning branches. Good thinking, Iko says, already on the ground with me. Let's trade tanking and hit it with backstabs until we can assassinate it. Before I can nod in acceptance of her plan, she charge strikes the massive spider and goes to town with her ornate silver kunai. She's able to fight it much easier now, and gets in strong critical hits with her blades,
taking off 1% of the monster's HP each time. I dash behind the spider's large abdomen and hide until I get the permissive to backstab. Throwing my arm back, I prepare a charged attack and let it fly when the gauge hits full. You backstab.